Finally, because this doesn't really resonate, not. A teacher tackling a shooter a couple of days ago in Littleton, Colorado, being dubbed a hero. He doesn't want to hear any of that, but really it was terrific what he did. Still some injuries. The U.S. men's hockey team, wow. They beat the Swiss, they move on, and the Canadians easily end up beating the Russians. Boy, I'm stunned by that. There still is that chance we could have a rematch of 2002 between the Americans and the Canadians. All that plus this hour will go live to Afghanistan. Sadly, remember in Kabul we just had all those civilian casualties. What does it all mean and how are the people feeling there? We're going to check in a half an hour and find out what it's like on the ground. You might not have caught this, Lost in All the Sauce, because the big Olympics going on and what's happening with Team USA and Lindsey Vonn and Julie Mancuso and a theme of host of other themes running wild with the Olympics. But World Cup in soccer coming up in June. And then what's the American team going to look like? I have no idea. Why? Because the regulars aren't there. There was an exhibition that was played earlier in the evening in Tampa, Florida. I would love to be at that exhibition with my nephew, though, to tell you the truth. And how did the Americans do that went up against the 71st ranked team in El Salvador? Our soccer expert, Tom Gully, who knows all things soccer and more, joins us right here from the get-go to explain what's happening in the road to the World Cup. Hey, Tom, how are you?
Great. How about yourself?
Oh, I couldn't be better, I'm telling you. You know, it's funny because you're moving to Tampa, but you missed this exhibition. And it's hard to really – I saw a little bit of it. It's hard to really figure anything out as far as the American team is concerned because most of the – I'll call them regulars – weren't there, right?
That's correct. It was difficult because – this is Major League Soccer's off season, and the game was, of course, played in Tampa in the United States, and most of the U.S.'s best players play over in Europe. So this game was a chance for Coach Bob Bradley to look at about 20 guys and to decide how they're going to fill about five spaces, maybe even less than that, on the World Cup team.
Wow. And so this, you know, we're actually, what are we talking about? For the end of February, we're almost into March. I mean, this is important times. How key is it for these players to get back together, those European players that are part of the mix on this World Cup team, and for what's happening with the U.S., how important is it that they start to play together, Tom? I'm assuming, I think I read somewhere, it might be maybe even mid-May before they can all come together as a team. How much does this hurt them not being able to play now?
It doesn't necessarily hurt them that badly. They're used to it. The team they played tonight, El Salvador, has kind of the same situation. They do not have a lot of European players themselves, and so it's not that bad. Now, the full team will actually play a week from tonight in the Netherlands, the match today was really to see which two or three players from MLS is going to make the trip to go over there and be the, you know, last few players on the squad of 23. The whole game was kind of a microcosm of the problems that the U.S. is going to face over in South Africa this summer because, you know, El Salvador scored their goal on a defensive miscue, and one of the U.S.'s best defenders, Guichan Wehu, was just injured a month or two ago, and we're not sure if we're going to have him back. And then the U.S. couldn't score in the first half when they really dominated the game. And that's the other problem we have is our best striker, Charlie Davies, was injured in a very bad car accident shortly after the Confederations Cup. So those are the two areas the U.S. really has to work on, and those are the areas they had a little bit of a problem with this evening.
Oh, in saying that, was there anything at all besides – that's good information. Besides that, was there any player at all that you think is worth watching, somebody that – he may pick somebody you think could possibly play some kind of a role with the American team?
Well, if you'd asked me before the game which of the players in this match were going to go to South Africa, I would have said Brian Ching and Sasha Kljestan, and those are the two goal scorers. So they both had a pretty good match. I would say that the one player in this game that might not even be known that well to some U.S. fans is a player by the name of Clarence Goodson, and he's the only player tonight that was not a Major League Soccer player. He plays for a team over in Norway, and he can fill a role in the middle of that defense that might be missing if Yewu does not come back in time. And he had what I would consider to be an outstanding match. He played a very competent game. He got forward quite a bit. And for a U.S. defender, I think he was looking very, very good. He's the player that impressed me the most that I had not seen play that much.
Yeah, and so once that's all figured out, once who's ever the few guys that make that final roster, you talked about a bunch of them will be there in the Netherlands, but then you have some really big exhibitions. You've got one against the Czechs, I think, and there's one that I might be at, actually. It's in May, at the end of May, and it's at Philadelphia, and I think it's Turkey that they play there, and this is all before they leave for South Africa. And kind of mapping this out as someone who's played soccer, watched it, certainly analyzed it, all that sort of stuff, what kind of shot, you know, put your American put your American pride and cheering aside, what kind of shot do you give the Americans to do well at the World Cup?
Well, if those two players that I mentioned had not gotten injured, I would have given them a very good chance to advance past the final 16. As it stands, the U.S. is grouped with England, a team that is one of the best teams in the world and had an excellent qualification run. But then they also are grouped with Algeria and Slovenia, which are two teams that the U.S. should be able to handle in the first round, even with the squad that they currently have. So I predict that they will get through the next round. It's going to be very, very close if they cannot get some scoring threat going. But I do see them getting through to the next round. It's just tough because that first game is against England. England is holding a 60-year grudge against the United States for upsetting them in the 1950 World Cup, which may be the biggest upset in world soccer history. So that game's going to, you know, I predict we'll lose that match, sadly, but I do think that we'll be able to gain enough points after that to get to the round of 16, which is just a straight-up knockout round. And then if you look at the brackets and the way they're arranged, we may be playing a team like Germany or a very highly ranked team because we will likely finish second in our group, which means we'll be playing a first-place team from the group that we're also paired with.
Mm. How fun would that be to be in South Africa? I mean, I think it's more than historic. I think it's just going to be explosive, the atmosphere, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I think it's going to be one of the most incredible World Cups to attend of all time because that country, unlike some of the other countries it's been held in, is going to look at that as really a once-in-a-century kind of celebration. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Tom, your information was terrific. We look forward to talking more soccer with you as we get closer to the World Cup.
Thanks, and we need Julie Mancuso on the U.S. national soccer team because we have a lack of speed up front, and I think she could provide that.
Oh, yeah, she's like a bullet when she's going down those runs. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
Okay, how about that? So the United States did beat El Salvador, by the way, in that little exhibition. 2-1 was the final score. But you heard Tom give us all that good stuff that, you know, you're not looking at ultimately the team that you will see go into World Cup action. Coming up on the flip side, there was a lot of action on the Hill. We're going to talk about it next.
A revolution in smoking is underway. A revolution all smokers of traditional cigarettes should know about. Keep listening for a special offer from PowerVapor.com. Standard tobacco cigarettes contain over 4,000 harmful chemicals. Now it's time to release yourself from the grip of big tobacco and experience true smoking freedom. PowerVapor.com is an e-cigarette. with the look, feel, and smoke of a real cigarette, but with no tar, no carbon monoxide, and no bad odors. Power Vapor's e-cigarettes deliver just the right amount of nicotine in a water vapor that looks and feels like real smoke. Yes, you choose from four levels of nicotine, and that puts you back in control. Plus, you'll enjoy eight flavors and big savings over traditional cigarettes. Get the facts and see our demonstration video at PowerVapor.com. That's PowerVapor.com. Log on to PowerVapor.com right now for a special 10% discount and 30-day money-back guarantee. PowerVapor.com, the smoking gun heard round the world.
Originally, we the people have entrusted government to be the guardians of currency, to ensure purity, content, weights and measures of gold and silver coins citizens would use for commerce. This reinstalled confidence after the demise of the fiat continental system, wisdom being lost with time. The government we once entrusted to protect from counterfeit has colluded with private business, creating the largest fiat counterfeiting scheme our country ever experienced. This is not only a transfer of power to an institution that is not accountable to our elected government, but has also caused the dollar to lose more than 90 cents of its original value. Now foreign governments are trying to divest themselves from this once world reserve currency. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. I'm offering a book that explains how the system works. Call me today at 800-686-2237. I will give you a silver dollar free just for purchasing the book. Call today at 800-686-2237. Again, that's 800-686-2237.
Great news for pure water lovers. The Big Berkey Water Filter is available once again. And stay tuned to hear about a valuable offer from Berkey Water Filters. Choosing the right water purification system can be a daunting task. That's why BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com shows you a cost and benefit comparison. The Berkey Water Filter is economical, with a single set of filters that can last for 5 to 10 years. Berkey Water Filters are healthy and far superior to other filtration systems. They remove harmful pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, and unhealthy chemicals like chlorine. And Berkey water filter systems are powerful enough to purify both treated and untreated water, like stagnant ponds. Get the gold standard in water filters at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. For a limited time, choose a free shower filter, fluoride filters, or two Sport Berkey bottles with every system purchase. And GCN listeners get 5% off all ceramic filter systems. Details at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com or call 1-877-99-BERKEY. That's 1-877-99-BERKEY.
How many medals does Team USA have? 28, my friends. 7 gold medals, 9 silver, and 12 bronze. Adding to the totals, because we just have 4 days left in the Olympics, for the bobsled for the women, they got the bronze. Bravo. The Canadians, by the way, took the gold and the silver in that one. The Canadians, for their part, they have 15 medals total, so they're behind, well behind the United States, but they do have 7 gold medals, and the Germans have 7 as well, so the 3 all have 7s, Canada, Germany, and the United States in the gold, if you want to talk about the gold medal race. But as for overall medals, U.S. definitely leads in that one. In the short track 3,000-meter relay, the women, the U.S. women, also won a bronze. Meanwhile, there were some other interesting things that happened that weren't in the medal rounds, and that included the men's hockey team, because they were able to knock off the Swiss. And when I say able to knock off the Swiss, remember the Canadians struggled a little bit with the Swiss team. It wasn't a layup that the United States was going to be able to get by them. They did 2-0. And it was thanks to Ryan Miller in the Nets. He's such a great goaltender. And Zach Parise, who's just been tremendous. He had 2 goals. An empty netter sealed it for the U.S., so they move on in the semis. One of the other big stories in the Olympics has to be that the Canadians still survive. Could it set up the Canadians to play the U.S. for the gold medal. We'll see if that happens, because that would be going back to 2002 when the Canadians beat the Americans. But what's interesting is the Canadians ripped the Russians to reach the semis, and they did. I watched a big chunk of this game, and it was a 7-3 romp. You have to call it that at best. I mean, right from the get-go, the Canadians were in control here. They were very focused, and the goaltending was iffy, certainly for the Russians, and there were a lot of openings, and they took advantage of it, and that was the key thing. So huge bounce back after losing to the Americans 5-3 on Sunday. The other big story in this was Lindsey Vonn falling and actually hurting her pinky finger. So it looked like she might be out of the Olympics, but now she's going to compete in the final race, which would be the Alpine. She's decided that she's able to do that despite the finger injury. She's 100%, that's what they're saying. 100% sure, absolutely, because that's what everybody wanted to know. And also, what are her chances of the downhill gold medal? And, you know, she said she'll race, and then she talked about the fact that there was just too much drama, and she's not going to worry about that. There was kind of a little back and forth between her and Julie Mancuso, as they have been rivals for a long time, and they're both on the same team. What happened was odd, because Vonn went down in the Super G, but she crashed in the slalom, and while she was still getting aid, the teammate Julie Mancuso was sent down, and so her run was halted. She was allowed a restart, but obviously she was upset. Her concentration was thrown off, and she left the finish area in tears after completing the rescheduled run with a time well outside of the top 10. She finished like 18. And Lindsey Vonn said, "Hey, I know she's disappointed. I feel terrible that I crashed." But she crashed, and she wasn't off of the slopes, and you know, the rest is history. As for the rest of We Can Count, we move from the Olympics to a couple of other things. They're calling it a snowover. I love the nicknames, the Snowmageddon, and you know, anything you could possibly think of. That's what they're trying to do, the weathermen in the East Coast, to dream up something new. But more snow. About 150,000 people lost power Wednesday. Schools were closed, hundreds of schools, and at least three traffic deaths sadly happened as a result of a foot of snow. Where am I talking about? Albany, New York. It's just terrible trying to dig out there. That's where the power was knocked out, but they weren't the only place that felt that. Air traffic to a standstill from Boston to Philadelphia. You've got the system packing incredible winds that could blanket the area with another foot of snow. So you have this 1-2 punch is what they're calling it. Wind gusts of up to 40 to 50 miles an hour that are causing power outages and dumping a foot of snow or more on some of the areas. And they're expecting it to keep going. So who knows ultimately what it will be. Just get the sticks out and start measuring it. It's just been crazy. In Philadelphia, already they're at over 70 inches, the most that they have ever had. Who knows ultimately what the final record will be when it's all said and done. But that's an incredible number for an area that usually gets a dust of snow. All right, speaking of We Can Count, here's more numbers for you. Marion Pringle celebrating yet another birthday. What's so significant about that? Well, I think it's significant if you're 104 years old. She is the oldest U.S. citizen at that age, because she's got proof of it. The Portland woman was actually born in Canada in 1906 and no longer drives, but needed to renew her license to keep her medical records current. And Oregon now requires proof of citizenship for a license. She didn't have it, but she moved to Portland as a young girl and tried to get the documentation, and she did, and got the U.S. citizenship and all that sort of stuff. So 104 years old. Boy, that's a living long, isn't it? Hopefully she's been healthy during most of that, because that's always the concern. How long you live is, it's how long do you, how well have you kept yourself, I guess, and have you avoided some of the things that happen, that start to happen when you get older? Here's another odd number for you. UK smugglers sink a boat with $620 million of a cocaine shipment. $620 million. Ooh, you got to think some people are upset about that. These smugglers were shipwrecked. They were trying to get to England, and it would have been the biggest haul in that area, but they're facing now long sentences after the end of a series of trials. Here's what happened. The guys were yards away from the shore when bad weather sunk their dinghy. The dinghy was loaded with a ton and a half of drugs. So the thought is that they ran out of gas after rendezvousing with some associates on a yacht, that yacht had brought the $620 million worth of cocaine in from the Caribbean. And an air sea rescue had to be launched to save one of the guys from drowning while others struggled on the shore. The gang included one guy, a former Scotland Yard detective who escaped and was caught a year later during another cocaine smuggling operation. Ooh, you think he would have learned that he got away and then he tried to do it again and they were able to nail him. So they're gonna end up doing serious time for this with that amount. And they've got a whole gang of people involved in it, and they were able to nail them. This was kind of a high-stakes game that they were gambling with. And the weird thing is, they might have been able to get away with it if the weather hadn't wreaked havoc with their plans, because that's what part of the reason why that dinghy was, you know, why it sunk. Otherwise, they probably would have made it ashore and been able to deliver their supply. But, that's a whole bunch of coke, and that's a whole bunch of risk there, isn't it? And they were able to get nailed on that one. All right, we have one last one for you in We Can Count. This is a whole lot of fun doing this, by the way. I love this one because this guy deserved it. New York City serial rapist has been handed a prison sentence for more than four centuries. That's a big fat number, isn't it? 430 years. Boker Thomas found guilty of raping seven women in elevators, stairwells, or apartments. They traced him through DNA and security camera footage. And, he's pled not guilty. Four of his victims were in court for the verdict, including one who was just 13 years old at the time of the rape, and that was in 2008. So I think this guy pretty much got what he deserved. Hey, coming up next, we're going to go to Afghanistan and talk to Anand Gopal about what's happening in Kabul and the Americans' efforts to win over the Afghanistan people. You don't want to miss it. Hang with us.
Why is drinking pure high alkaline pH water the most important factor in maintaining high energy and vibrant health? Because alkalizing water helps your body rid itself of acidic waste and increases the oxygen content of your body. Disease organisms like bacteria, viruses, and cancer cannot survive in an alkaline high pH environment. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops combine a unique formula of the most alkaline minerals. Using AlkaVision pH Drops is the best way to make your water alkaline to help you get rid of acid and regain your health and energy. Simply put 10 drops in the water you drink to raise the pH to an alkaline level. Most experts agree that the water you drink should be at a pH level of 8 or higher. Order your bottle of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops now by going directly to AlkaVision.com. That's AlkaVision.com. Or by calling 269-409-1776. 269-409-1776 today.
You're listening to GCN. GCN. Genesis Communications Radio Network.
For safety, you lock doors, set alarms, buy antivirus software, maybe even have a watchdog. Do you care as much about your air and water? Lock out harmful poisons from entering your body with airandaqua.com. Using purification devices from airandaqua.com allows you to enjoy safety and security with every breath you make and every sip you take. For free shipping on purchases, discounts, and newsletters, visit airandaqua.com or call 866-380-2782. Shop airandaqua.com and purify your life.
We the People grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit and carting to a private bank, having it led back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Hi, Ted Anderson. I'm placing a silver dollar in a book explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
Afraid to answer it? Afraid to answer your door? Did you know that debt settlement, bankruptcy, and attorneys will cost you about 10 times more than you would legally be required to pay creditors? These are not ways to help you get out of debt. They are expensive payment plans. And if you're in debt already, does it make sense to load yourself up with another payment plan? Zero debt in 90 days gets you out of debt in 90 days, guaranteed. And that's the website you need to visit right now. ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. Zero debt in 90 days gets you out of debt without a payment plan and without attorneys or going to court. ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com is the quickest solution to debt relief on the planet. If you have more than $25,000 in credit card debt, student loans, or difficult mortgage situation, we can help, and we are the only organization to provide written guarantees on the results. Go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. That's ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com.
This is Alex Jones, and I want to tell you about the Ecola Blue Atmospheric Water Generator that produces pure drinking water right from the humidity in the air. No, this isn't science fiction. It's very real. I know because I use one every day in my own home, and it's available right now to you. Because you know exactly where your water comes from with Ecola Blue, you'll know what's in your cup. Clean, great-tasting water without all the pollutants. Get your family off the grid today by ordering your own Ecola Blue Atmospheric Water Generator for your home or business. Their best seller, the Ecola Blue 28, produces up to 7 gallons of water every day. The Ecola Blue 28 is easy to use and economical. Generate your own pure water from the humidity in the air. This system is free of chemicals and uses a multi-stage filtration system, including reverse osmosis, carbon filters, and ultraviolet lights. Order now and claim your water independence today by calling Ecola Blue at 1-800-691-6043. That's 1-800-691-6043. Or visit Ecola Blue on the web at www.ecolablue.com today.
Started America Tonight 4.5 years ago, and now so much of what we're talking about is focused there in this war to win over the hearts and minds of the Afghanistan people. Who better to join us on this show? And we're thrilled to have him live from Afghanistan, Anand Gopal. Anand, thanks so much for joining us. Anand is a Kabul-based journalist, folks, by the way. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
The other day when those three minivans were hit immediately, our commander on the ground, General McChrystal, came out and he issued an apology for what happened because, of course, all of those, tragically, all of those civilian casualties. How was that apology, was it that apology accepted by the people in Kabul and the Afghanistan folks that you spoke to in the aftermath of this?
Now, General McChrystal came on TV and issued the apology which is interesting because probably only 5% of the country has access to electricity, which means that almost nobody, and especially the people who are most affected, didn't see the apology. This has been the case again and again where U.S. forces have gone out of the way to try to apologize for incidents, but it hasn't reached the people that they're trying to reach.
What would, as somebody who certainly knows that area, what would you suggest would be the better way to get that message out, to reach the people? Because I think that's vital to let them know that, hey, this wasn't the intention. Sadly, this was this was a casualty of war situation that we didn't want to happen, but this certainly was not our intention. How do you get that message across to people who, as you say, Anand, don't watch television where they don't have that electricity? It's a different kind of world. What would you do?
Well, I think we could learn a little bit from the Taliban in this case, what they do, because, of course, they use these incidents to their advantage. And they'll talk in the bazaar. They'll talk in the mosque. They have people in every village. And what they'll do is they'll make this the topic of conversation on the ground. And it's hard to match that, I understand, but this needs to be done on a local level. So dealing with the local leaders on the ground, the village elders, for example, coming and meeting them and talking to them, or perhaps talking to people in the bazaar and trying to counter that information flow from the Taliban may be the way to go.
You know, in your conversations with the people at the marketplaces and the bazaars and whatnot, since this has been ongoing for 8+ years, are the people weary of the NATO forces? Are they tired of the sort of occupation? What's the reaction now at this point, I guess, to the Americans and the others?
People are weary, and this is something that's really come about in the last couple of years, because in the early years of the war, most people were pretty welcoming of the U.S. forces, and they saw them as a change from what had come before, especially from the Taliban. But today on the ground, wherever I travel throughout, especially the Pashtun part of the country, there's a lot of anger and disillusionment with the coalition forces. One thing I hear again and again is that when the coalition forces come into an area, the fighting and the violence in that area increases. Now, whether that's because of the coalition forces or because of the Taliban, nonetheless, a lot of local people view this as the fault of the coalition forces, and so their standing is very low now.
We've seen that several of the Taliban leaders have been captured, and, of course, the reaction to the people in the United States is, wow, okay, now we're seeing something. Something's happening here. That's the idea, how many are left and what... And where do you go from here? But what's the reaction been from the people in that country to seeing a couple of these, I'll call them top leaders of the Taliban, being captured and actually questioned by the Pakistani government? What's been that reaction?
People are very suspicious of Pakistan's motives because Pakistan is seen as having supported the Taliban, the Afghan Taliban, for many years, and all of a sudden they've turned and arrested some of the leaders. And so a lot of conspiracy theories, a lot of rumors about why that's the case. Some people believe that these Taliban leaders who are arrested are actually people who are reaching out to the Afghan government and to the West to try to start negotiations, and Pakistan didn't want that to happen, so they clamped down on it. It's conjecture at this point. We don't know for sure, but this is the sentiment on the ground.
You know, it was a couple of months ago we were talking about Hamid Karzai, and we were talking about the elections, and then he, you know, what happens is, you know, the top contender drops out, doesn't want to do the special election, and Karzai gets that second term. As far as how people feel about Karzai going into yet another 6 years, are they embracing this, or no, there's still a lot of opposition to it?
I would say there's not even opposition or embracing of it. It's a lot of – there's just resignation that this is the way things are. In the presidential elections, most people didn't actually vote for Karzai. But most people didn't vote at all. The security situation precluded most people from going to the polls, so it was just way too dangerous. Most of the polling centers weren't open. And to compensate for that, there was a lot of fraud on behalf of the president. And so a lot of people felt that the election was an empty exercise, an exercise to show the world that there was a democratic process here, but there was a feeling of disenfranchisement. And so when you talk to a lot of Afghans, they don't wholeheartedly support Karzai, and they say, well, this is sort of what we get, but they're not really at the point where they're opposing him because they think there's nothing that will come out of any opposition. So it's really sort of resignation and passivity that's come out of this.
Part of what General McChrystal and General Petraeus have talked about is this mission and the idea that it's probably 12 months, maybe to 18 months, to win over the people of Afghanistan, to gain their trust, to help this country be able to stand on its own two feet. Oops, we lost him there. We knew we had limited time, so that's okay. But what a great conversation with Anand Gopal, who's a Kabul-based journalist. And you got his impressions, certainly, and in his conversations with people in Afghanistan. First of all, their feelings about Karzai, like he said, they're just resigned to the fact that he's the man and that the elections were obviously a dirty pool from the beginning, which is what we know and what we've certainly have reported, and that the message, here's the big news in this, the message that McChrystal wanted to get out to the people did not reach the people because only 5% have televisions, have a way to actually have heard that apology. So it's more of grassroots where you have to get into the conversation on the ground level to be able to reach the people. Wow, so how interesting was that. And now as a result of what's happened in Kabul and, of course, Marja as well, American troops have been issued specific directives restricting night raids. The goal is to woo the Afghanistan people away from the Taliban. So it's a door-to-door situation. That's the best way to describe it at this point. And that's what the coalition forces are doing, just going about it the best they can and hoping when they get to some of these places they're not booby-trapped or rigged with explosives, I guess is a better way to say it. So they're holding these what they call raids, and it's one of the top concerns by the Afghans. So they're now limiting the use of airstrikes. That was responsible for most of the civilian deaths that we've been talking about in the last, I guess, month or so, because that's where it's really been heavy lately. And the idea is they would limit some of the night raids and the number of groups along with the Afghan government and civilians. They're pressuring NATO to rethink the whole nighttime deal in the first place, because of the trauma it creates within those areas. And that's what Anand was just saying there. The international force, somehow that's getting lost when they go to those villages and you see that naturally the skirmish is up and the violence is up. It doesn't do anything to ingratiate the Americans or the NATO forces with the people on the ground, because a lot of those raids become violent and you've got, you know, detainees being kicked or even beaten while they're handcuffed, and they're seeing that. If you remember, there was a UN report that spelled out the number of people who were killed during night raids in 2009, and it was close to 100, specifically 98 people. So among the public in Afghanistan, night raids just make them furious because of also cultural sensitivities. If a foreign soldier goes into an Afghanistan house and try to search boxes of women's clothes, the men get very, very upset, and that creates problems for the forces and destroys the perception of NATO among those local people. And that's exactly what this is all about. The mission has been spelled out so many times. Reach out to the people. Have the people trust you and move forward that way. It's the only way that we can end this thing and have the people stand on their own two feet and get rid of the Taliban. Coming up on the flip side, we have odds and ends, that horrible story about the killer whale attack in Orlando.
If you owe money to the IRS, you can't make the problem go away by yourself. But with the help of Dan Pilla, you can get your problem solved once and for all.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. For 30 years, I've helped thousands of people solve their tax debt problem, and I can help you solve yours, too. We take a very simple but proven three-step approach to solving your problem. First, we stabilize IRS collection actions so you don't have to worry about the IRS seizing your bank account or paycheck. Next, we build a comprehensive plan to get your tax debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even completely eliminated. And finally, we work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. Call us for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829. We'll work together to get your problem solved, guaranteed.
Dan Pilla has been protecting taxpayers from the IRS for three decades, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
We all know that the Berkey water purification systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 4 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey guy offers amazing specials for Berkey water systems. The revolutionary Berkey light systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels, and removes harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey light system today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $209, and the Berkey guy will include three Sport Berkey water bottles and ship everything to you free of charge. That's right, three Sport Berkey water bottles and free shipping, an $87 value, yours free, but only for a limited time. Just call the Berkey guy at 1-877-886-3653 now to order. That's 1-877-886-3653, or order online now at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Is it safe to breathe anymore? Crowded public places, global pandemics, and news reports of potential new strains of bacteria and viruses make you wonder. What if there was a germ-killing nasal spray that acted almost like hand sanitizer for your nose? There is. It's called Sinofresh Homeopathic Nasal Spray, and it's a proven germ killer. Sinofresh is a revolutionary doctor-recommended nasal spray that kills a broad spectrum of viruses, bacteria, molds, and fungi on contact in your nose. Sinofresh causes no drug interactions, no loss of smell, no rebound congestion, contains no alcohol, is non-habit forming, and is safe for daily use. Sinofresh must be a part of your family survival plan. Go to GCNlive.com now and click on the Sinofresh banner. The first 1,000 customers to click on the Sinofresh banner and purchase Sinofresh antiseptic nasal spray are instantly registered to win a free 24-bottle case. Go to GCNlive.com and click on Sinofresh. Breathe free. Breathe safe. Use Sinofresh. It works.
Later this hour, we're going to talk more about that shooting in Littleton, Colorado. Thank goodness no one was hurt. And also the Olympics. How about those medals? The U.S. up to 28. My prediction of 30 getting a little shaky. It looks like it could be maybe over 30, especially the way the U.S. men's hockey team is playing. It's been exciting to watch all the stuff out of Vancouver. So here we are in America tonight, and twice a month, the guru of all things collectible joins us on this show. We're always thrilled to have him, Harry Rinker. A lot of fun to talk to Harry Rinker. There's been some interesting things in the collectible world that have happened lately with something we've talked about and some of you have called in and asked about, comic books. Hey, Harry, how are you?
We're doing great. What's happening out in your world there, kiddo?
Everything's good because no snow, at least in my neighborhood. That's the big thing now, snow in Texas. I know you're getting snow there.
Well, first of all, I just looked out the window. It's like 1 o'clock in the morning here in Connecticut, and there's no snow. There's no rain. There's no nothing out there.
Good.
You know, it's been an interesting time being in Brookfield, Kate. That big snow that hit Philadelphia, we didn't get any. The 30-incher in Philly, we didn't get any. The 24-incher after that, we got an inch. We did get about 4 inches the other week, and this last big snow that went through here, we got rain. were right on the line. North of us, they had snow. So now, of course, they're predicting the next big storm coming through, and I'm losing all faith in weathermen, I must tell you. No, I have to drive out for a personal appearance in Erie this weekend. And, you know, I was out in Buffalo 2 weekends ago, and there they had 4 inches, which is known in Buffalo as a light dusting.
Yeah, light dusting. That is a light dusting for them.
Yeah, but my friend told me, I talked to my friend in Florida, who told me that, not this week, but I think the week you were referring to, a week or two ago, it snowed in 49 of the 50 states.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
The only exception being Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
So much for global warming.
Yeah, so much for it. I agree.
Well, it will be interesting because clearly, you know, for those of us that are older, I don't put you in that category, mind you, living here on the East Coast, the winter this year is kind of like the winters I remember as a kid. These big, heavy snowstorms and so forth, although we've broken records everywhere.
It's crazy. Now, 70 inches, yeah.
Now, not in this area, but down there. But all's right with the world, kid. The position players reported today.
That's a good thing, isn't it?
No, tomorrow. Is it today or tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow, right. Position mm-hmm. players report in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And we finally get a sport back everybody's willing to listen to.
Yeah, could that be baseball?
Could be.
Yeah, you know I'm a huge baseball fan, and obviously you are too,
Yeah, well, you know, I like the baseball season. You know, the teams are back, and a lot of speculation, a lot of off-season activity for everybody, actually.
So no kidding.
We'll see how it goes.
Hey, let me ask you about this, because I've even had people
Million-dollar comic book?
Yeah, everybody wanted to know about that.
I may have held that. Actually, in my hands at one point in time. I'm not sure it's the same one. You know, there's a mystique about this. Imagine paying $1 million for something that's sealed in plastic you can't touch. What happened was that, you know, there are certain high-end pieces that have not become collectible in that sense, but have become investment-grade commodities. The Honus Wagner baseball card is one example. And, you know, the Heritage Galleries in Dallas, Texas, has a number of players and people with money who are investing big bucks in a lot of things. They had an auction several weeks ago where they sold 3 coins in the auction for $1 million plus a piece. So here comes DC number one. And what happened was back in the 1980s, a collection came out in Pennsylvania, where there were 12 of the top 20 comics, among which was Action Number 1 and DC 27, the comics that originated Superman and Batman. And the collection sold for $75,000, and the Superman comic sold later to the dealer who bought the collection, got $75,000 for that. And now it broke. And now that comic book, not that specific comic book, but that comic book is now broken $1 million. Okay.
Wow, that's...
You know, sooner or later, the bubble's going to burst.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is, who's going to be the guy that's stuck with it? Who's going to be the guy that's, you know, that paid the price like this and then isn't going to be able to sell it for it? You know, to me, it's P.D. Barnum all over again. Fools and their money are soon parted, or there's a sucker born every minute, or whatever you want to...
But it's good when you're on the side of you find the sucker and you sell it and you get the big bucks for it.
Yeah, well, see, that's one of the things that we learned in the Great Recession of 1988. Now, you know, talk about the Great Recession that we're in right now, but the antique trade went through, or the country did too, through a recession in 1988. And in 1988... we proved that there is a limit. We proved there is a price at which everything will not sell. And obviously we haven't hit it with this comic book yet. But the thing about it is, you know, it raises the important question in the antique trade in a lot of categories. Who's the winner? Is the winner the person with the object who paid more for it than anybody else has ever paid for it again? Before, you know, is the winner the person who has the comic book and who paid more for it than anybody ever paid before, or is the winner all the people along the way who sold it and have the money?
I say the people who have the money.
Yes, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. You know, the people with the money have the money. The person with the comic book has the comic book. And it would be nice. It would be nice. Wouldn't life be nice if everything went up in value? I suppose what the reality check is, maybe people ought to go out and look at what their homes are worth today.
Oh, yeah, don't tell us about that. Boy, that's a discussion of another kind.
Well, it is a discussion of another kind, but it's not irrelevant. It's not irrelevant to this discussion.
Oh, no. Absolutely.
Because
value.
Furthermore, these things are just tangible things.
Right.
I mean, the thing about that comic book, it's printed on pulp paper. You know, at some point in time, not tomorrow and not in the next number of years, that comic book's going to rot.
Yeah, and there goes that
$1 million. Somehow, to me, there seems to be some justice here.
Yeah, ta-da.
But, sure. You know, hey, boys and their toys.
Yeah,
one thing it's safe to say, Kate, in defense of your sex, it wasn't a woman who bought it.
No. Mm-mm.
No, I'm sure not.
No, and most women are, I don't know that women are.
Women have more sense than to spend $1 million on a 10-cent comic book.
I think so, too. Plus, I think most women.
As a male chauvinist, it hurts me to say that, Kate. Truly.
Plus, how big a fan are women of comics?
Well, that's one of the things we haven't talked about. Antiques and collectibles are sexist.
Yes.
I think so, too. I mean, Krause Publications, one of the leading publishers of trade papers and so forth in our field, did a study one time to try to find out the number of women and number of men that collected in any category. And the most disproportionate category they found were records. 97% of the collectors were men and 3% were women.
Mm.
I would have thought it was firearms, but I know that there's a lot of women's firearms collectors out there.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by the records, though. Absolutely.
No, because you've had experience in that. Now, I would say in sports collectibles, it wouldn't surprise me to find the ratio of men to women 9-to-1 or something like that.
Yeah, probably you're right. We have to talk about it. Let's do that on our next time. We're almost out of time. I can't believe it. And I had a question to ask you.
Go ahead. Ask away.
Somebody wanted me to ask you this. They've got the Barry Bonds, and they figured it's going to be worth nothing. But they have a Barry Bonds rookie card. Now you know all the stuff that's going on.
Well, better than Mark McGuire.
Yeah, that's true. That was kind of my response. I think it's better than that. Was that even going to be worth anything?
I think it's the situation like Rose. I think the sports writers are going to just be in a dilemma until they solve the Rose issue, and then they're going to have to solve the Bonds issue. How can you not put Bonds in the Hall of Fame? But then again, how could you not put Rose in the Hall of Fame? These guys can find all the rules they want, but nothing takes away the accomplishments of these people.
Right.
Now, unfortunately, both gentlemen bent the rules. And for that, they will suffer.
Yeah.
But I will tell you, over the next number of years, as Barry Bonds and many other people involved with the thing, I mean, what are you going to do with Roger Clemens?
Oh, yeah, forget it. I think he doesn't get in until he's dead.
Yep. I mean, this is the great, either that or we have a special wing.
Yeah, the asterisk wing.
The asterisk wing. That's right.
I love that. Harry, we're out of time, so next week when you come on...
Second week in March.
So the second week in March when you come on, let's talk about antiques and collectibles, male and female, and we'll take calls.
Actually, I was packing up my library and found two books that were written in the 70s called Antiques for Men and Antiques for Women.
Perfect. Dig them out, and we'll talk about it next time, okay? You have a good one. Harry Rinker. Oof. I could talk to him all night long. Stay with us.